Have you ever found yourself just, drowning in information, trying to get your head around something complex, maybe for work, maybe just because you're curious?
Oh, definitely. Wanting to be properly informed, but not like completely overwhelmed.
Exactly. And today we're diving into a perfect example of that. It's this really fascinating puzzle around plastic degradation and, well, a pretty surprising recent twist in EU rules.
Yeah, it's a classic case, really.
Yeah.
Good intentions hitting some unexpected roadblock.
It really is a story where things got complicated, leading to, well, a major rethink. Okay, let's unpack this.
Right. So our focus today is really on the EU Single-Use Plastics Directive. That's 2009/904. A very ambitious bit of law, really.
Yeah, laudable goals.
Absolutely. Aimed squarely at tackling plastic pollution, which we all agree is a huge issue. But like you said, what seems straightforward, revealed layers of complexity, especially around different types of plastic and how they break down, or how people thought they broke down.
Precisely. So the core mission for us in this deep dive is to untangle this key difference between what the EU called oxo-degradable plastics.
Which kind of implied they just break into tiny bits that stick around.
Right, and oxo-biodegradable plastics, which, as we'll get into, are actually designed to fully biodegrade. We'll explore why the EU banned the first kind, based on what seems like a pretty shaky definition, honestly, and then look at this very recent confirmation about D2W products specifically, which sort of clears the air. Our sources give a really detailed picture of the whole thing, the science, the legal fights, everything.
It's quite the saga.
It is. Now, one key thing we found was that this ban on oxo-degradable plastics, it wasn't even in the commission's first draft sent to Parliament.
That's right, yeah, it was added later by the Environment Committee.
Which is interesting in itself.
It is because, well, that committee isn't primarily made up of scientific experts. And they put this ban into a draft article. What's really crucial here is that at that point, the EU's own science body, the European Chemicals Agency, ECA,
ECHA.
they hadn't actually finished their own studies on oxo-biodegradable plastic yet.
Huh. So the ban came before their own experts had reported back.
Seems that way. Despite that, Recital 15 of the directive, it lays out five main reasons for banning what they termed oxo-degradable plastics. And these reasons, well, they painted a really negative picture.
Okay, what were they?
So first, it doesn't properly biodegrade. Second, contributes to microplastic pollution. Third, it's not compostable. Fourth, it messes up conventional plastic recycling. And fifth, fails to deliver any proven environmental benefit.
Right, five big claims. It's crucial, though, isn't it, that these were aimed at what the EU called oxo-degradable.
Exactly. Because the definition they used and the actual science behind materials like D2W, that's where the whole thing gets complicated.
And that's what our sources really let us dig into. The counterarguments, the evidence for each of those 5 points, it's quite a clash between initial policy assumptions and the scientific
It
findings.
really is. So let's take them one by one using the evidence we have. First, that claim does not properly biodegrade. Well, the EU Parliament never actually said what properly means or gave a time frame.
Convenient.
But the counter evidence shows that oxo-biodegradable plastic, like D2W, does biodegrade out in the open environment. It meets the standard, ASTM D6954. That standard is specifically for plastics that degrade through, both oxidation and biodegradation.
Okay, so there's a standard for it.
Yes. And there was a big 4-year study, the OxoMar study,
Oh,
at a
yeah.
French marine lab, cited in our sources. They said, and I'm quoting loosely here, that they got congruent results showing oxo-biodegradable plastics do biodegrade in seawater and actually significantly better than conventional plastics.
Better. Wow.
Yeah. They specifically said the D2W catalyst was of crucial importance. And here's the kicker. Ordinary plastics, and even many bio-based ones, often don't biodegrade properly in the open environment. But they aren't banned.
So if I'm following the very first pillar of the ban, the biodegradation claim, it seems directly challenged by independent science on D2W. That's quite
It
something.
is.
What about the second point, that it contributes to microplastic pollution?
Right, another really interesting one. The main source of microplastics out there, it's actually conventional plastics, just fragmenting from sunlight exposure. And
Oh,
again,
and.
not banned. Oxo-biodegradable plastics, though, they're designed to convert into these sort of waxy substances that are biodegradable. They don't just create persistent little plastic bits.
So it's a different process.
A fundamentally different breakdown pathway.
Yeah.
And ECAs themselves, back in October 2018, they told the Biodegradable Plastics Association they were not convinced. Oxo-biodegradable plastic creates microplastics.
ECHA said that.
Yeah.
Even back then.
Yep. And what's more, ECHA's own definition of microplastics, the one they gave the commission, calls them persistent and universal pollutants that do not biodegrade.
Which complies.
Well, it strongly implies that if something does biodegrade, it doesn't fit their own definition of a microplastic.
So the biodegradation and the microplastic claims, they both seem pretty shaky based on the studies and even ECHA's own words. That's, yeah, a big inconsistency. What about number three, that it's not compostable?
Well, again, conventional plastics aren't compostable either, but, you know.
Not banned. I see a pattern here.
Exactly. Meanwhile, oxo-biodegradable plastics, they've actually been tested independently according to ISO 14855 and also in real industrial composting setups, found to be compostable.
They are compostable.
According to those tests, yes. Plus, the Parliament never really explained why compostability was relevant for banning a plastic designed for the open environment anyway. It's a bit of a non sequitur. Plastics just turn into CO2 in composting. They don't really become part of the compost itself.
That's a fair point. Okay, reason four, negatively affects the recycling of conventional plastic.
Yeah, and here's another contrast. It's pretty well known that bio-based compostable plastics, like PLA, do cause problems if they get into conventional recycling stream.
Right, they contaminate it.
They do, but they're not banned either. Oxo-biodegradable plastic, on the other hand, has actually been recycled safely with conventional plastics for years. One of the sources mentions the largest bread maker in the Western world doing it.
For real? So it can be recycled?
Seems so. There are reports from three expert testing houses confirming it's recyclable alongside normal plastics.
Okay, that's pretty solid counter-evidence across the board then, which leaves the fifth reason, quote, fails to deliver a proven environmental benefit.
This one feels almost like, well, common sense based on the other points. If a plastic is proven to biodegrade in the open environment, doesn't leave microplastics, and therefore reduces the amount of persistent plastic pollution.
Then that sounds like an environmental benefit to me.
It seems pretty obvious, right? What's so fascinating is just how specifically the scientific findings seem to tackle, and often just completely contradict, every single one of those initial justifications for the ban.
Wow. Okay, so just to recap that bit, the sources basically show that the whole foundation for the EU ban, those five reasons, every single one, was directly challenged, often disproven by scientific evidence, sometimes even using the EU's own agency's definitions or findings.
Pretty much, yeah.
And this use of language, the definitions, that seems absolutely critical here, doesn't it? Because it wasn't just the science. It sounds like definition of oxo-degradable they used in the policy was part of the problem, too.
Absolutely central to it. Scientifically, you know, according to EU standards experts, oxo-degradation means degradation from oxidative cleavage of macromolecules.
Okay, science speak, what does that mean?
It basically describes plastics that break down through oxidation, like exposure to air and sunlight, into smaller bits, microplastics. But they don't really become biodegradable, except maybe over a super, super long time. Think of a chain breaking into smaller links, but the links themselves don't vanish quickly.
Got it. So that's a standard science definition.
Right. But the EU Parliamentary Committee, they didn't use that. They essentially invented their own definition in Article 3.3 of the directive.
They wrote their own definition.
Yes. They defined oxo-degradable plastic as plastic materials that include additives which, through oxidation, lead one to the fragmentation into microfragments or two to chemical decomposition.
Fragmentation or chemical decomposition. Okay.
Now, the huge disconnect, the source points out, is that this definition in Article 3.3, it has no relation to the reasons for the ban given in Recital 15. Those reasons were about biodegradation, microplastics, recycling. This definition just talked about fragmentation or chemical decomposition.
That is odd.
And there's a massive flaw in their invented definition. It doesn't say the additives have to be deliberately added for this purpose.
Meaning
if you take it literally, it could accidentally cover loads of normal plastics that just happen to contain colorants or other things that might cause some oxidation and fragmentation over time. It's potentially way too broad.
Okay. And how does this relate to oxo-biodegradable, like D2W?
Well, for oxo-biodegradable plastic, like D2W, the breakdown happens because the polymer chains get shorter reduction in molecular weight. It's not chemical decomposition. Symphony scientists, other experts, they've confirmed this.
So it doesn't fit part two of their definition.
Correct. And independent labs also confirmed that oxidation happens naturally anyway, even without the D2W additive. The D2W just controls the speed to ensure biodegradation follows. And crucially, this process isn't chemical decomposition. So D2W doesn't seem to fit either part of the EU's invented definition properly.
Okay, this is a real tangle of science versus policy definitions. Given all that, it's really not surprising this ended up in court.
Not at all. Symphony, the company behind D2W, they took the EU to its own court, the General Court of the EU.
Right. What were they arguing?
They were seeking compensation, arguing that Article 5, the ban, and Article 3.3, the definition, weren't legally valid.
Mm-hmm.
Basically because the EU failed to properly look at the scientific evidence and didn't follow the proper regulatory procedures, like under REACH.
So they weren't asking the court, is D2W banned, but are the rules themselves valid?
Exactly. They were challenging the legality of the articles themselves.
And what did the court decide?
Well, the court basically said the EU institutions, like the Parliament and Council, had not exceeded the limits of their legislative discretion, even though the court also accepted that the scientific assessment should be based on the best scientific data available.
That sounds a bit contradictory. They should use the best science, but they didn't necessarily have to.
It does seem a bit strange, yes. Especially since, as our sources highlight, the legislators hadn't waited for ECA's final report. And even today, there's still no ECA dossier actually supporting the ban. Plus, no proper impact assessment was done beforehand.
That seems like a procedural issue, right?
You'd think so. But the court also said something quite controversial, that expert evidence paid for by Symphony, the claimant, has little probative value just because they paid for it.
Wait, how else do you get expert evidence or lab tests? You have to pay for them.
Precisely. The source argues this puts anyone challenging EU legislation at an impossible disadvantage and, frankly, undermines the credibility of the EU court. How can you bring evidence if paid-for evidence is dismissed?
Yeah, that sounds incredibly difficult for anyone trying to challenge a directive based on science. Okay, so after all this, the science, the definitions, the court case, where do things stand now? You mentioned some clarity finally arrived.
Yes, thankfully. The breakthrough or clarification came very recently, June 20th, 2025.
Just now, basically.
Yeah. The Environmental Protection Agency of the Republic of Ireland, an EU member state, obviously they issued a clear statement.
Okay, what did the Irish EPA say?
They found quite explicitly that D2W products do not contain oxo-degradable or oxo-biodegradable materials as defined by Directive EU 2019-904.
As defined by the directive. That definition issue again.
Exactly. Because D2W doesn't fit the flawed definition in Article 3.
Mm.
Therefore, the EPA concluded there's no objection to the distribution of D2W products in Ireland, and they closed their investigation.
Wow. So an EU member state agency is officially saying D2W is not covered by the ban because it doesn't meet the directive's own definition.
Correct. And this lines up perfectly with legal advice Symphony got from a top EU lawyer, Joshua Holmes, KC. So, the bottom line, connecting all the dots.
Yeah.
Oxo-biodegradable plastic, specifically D2W, falls outside those definitions in Recital 15 and Articles 5 and 3.3.3 of the directive. And therefore, it's not actually prohibited in the EU.
What a roller coaster. Yeah. Seriously, from a broad ban based on, well, seemingly flawed assumptions and definitions, through all the detailed science showing a different picture, the legal challenges, and now, finally, this official clarification saying D2W isn't what the ban was even defining.
Quite the journey.
It really shows how, you know, getting informed quickly but also thoroughly on these complex things, it helps you navigate without just feeling buried.
Absolutely. And the key takeaways here are huge, aren't they? The vital importance of getting definitions right in lawmaking. The absolute need for policy to be based on solid current science. And how legal challenges, even if the initial court ruling seems unhelpful, can eventually force clarity on how these directives are actually interpreted and applied on the ground. Which does leave us with a pretty big question to think about.
Yeah.
Well, it raises an important question for you listening to consider.
Yeah.
How do we as a society make sure that environmental policies are always grounded in the best, most up-to-date science? Especially when everything moves so fast and there's just so much information and misinformation flying around. When you look at this whole story from a lab innovation to global policy and back again, what really stands out to you? What lessons do we take away from this?